Welcome to Financial Repression Authority's Roundtable Insight, where the best fund managers, economists, and industry leaders discuss the key investment issues and challenges in the current macroeconomic environment.
Hi, welcome to FRA's Roundtable Insight. This is Richard Benulli. Today we have John Malden and Ira Harris. John is a visionary thinker, a noted financial expert, New York Times best-selling author, pioneering online commentator, and the publisher of one of the first publications to provide investors with free, unbiased information and guidance, the Thoughts from the Frontline letter. He's a frequent speaker at conferences around the world, sought-after contributor to numerous financial publications, as well as a regular guest on TV and radio. And Ira is an independent trader, hedge fund manager, global macro consultant trading foreign currencies, equities, bonds, and commodities for over 40 years. He's also served as CME director for several years. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
It's good to be here. Good to be there with Ira.
Thank you, John. Pleasure. This is a great pleasure indeed for me. Thanks.
Great. There's so much to discuss, but just wanted to get your initial thoughts, John. What do you make of what's happening in the economy and the financial markets?
Well, those are two different things. Number one, the economy is beginning to recover, but recover is a long way from recovered. And can I imagine us by the end of the year, in the first quarter next year, being back to 90%, maybe a little bit more of where we were a year ago? I mean, you know, for 2019, yes, but that means you're still 8-10% down. We'll still have high single digits unemployment, 8-9% unemployment. That is normally what we'd consider recession territory. That's hardly a V-shaped. And what we're getting now is the kind of the simple stuff, if you will. Just opening up the office, people going back, but you're not seeing enough, to use an example, you're not seeing enough traffic in restaurants to make them profitable. They're hoping traffic picks up, but, you know, open table is dropping off in some areas. Where there's, you know, more COVID activity. But the economy is going to pick up eventually, you know, 2021 earliest, probably 22, 23, we're back to where we were at GDP levels. This is a recession unlike any recession we've had in our history. This is a recession that the service sector led recession. The service sector was almost 85-90% of our economy, and we just knocked 40% of that off. We've never done that. And so we're having to recover from that. And a lot of restaurants, a lot of businesses are just not going to be able to open. I mean, now, will they eventually, you know, when we get a vaccine, when we get a way to treat this, will it all settle down? Yes. But people that are expecting us to be back to normal by this fall, I think are kidding themselves. Now, that's completely different than the market. When the Federal Reserve is supplying multiple trillions of dollars and is continuing to do so, and that money does seem to be finding its way into the markets, don't try to, one of the worst things that investors, and I'm sure Ira would agree with me, can do is to say, well, the market should be like this, therefore I'm going to invest like that. Well, you have to invest like the market is. And right now the market's wanting to go up. So it's kind of like, why fight it? Now, because of the nature of it going up, I would have tighter stops. I would be, you know, looking at what I want to hold, what I want to hold long term. I'd be paying attention to dividends. I'd be wanting to look at the underlying business models for the business. What are earnings going to look like a year from now? You know, 6 to 9 months from now, because we're going to see some serious earnings disappointment. I mean, everybody expects earnings for the second quarter when they come out to be ugly. They expect earnings for third quarter to be ugly. But when the earnings come out for first quarter next year and they're still ugly, for many companies, not every company, some companies are going to have better earnings. But it's going to be challenging. And maybe people will, if the Fed is still providing money, maybe people are, you know, and investors are willing to look past that market. But I mean, just because I'm bearish on the economy, I'm concerned about the economy, and I don't want to say bearish. You never get bearish on American ingenuity. Doesn't mean that I'm necessarily bearish on the stock market. I wouldn't be running out and selling anything today. So let me turn it over to Ira and let him give you his thoughts.
Sure.
So, you know, I'm one who believes the data is meaningless because the Fed has now turned itself into a social justice organization. Well, we can laugh all we want, but when Chair Powell says that all these people who have lost their jobs through no fault of their own, you now become a social justice organization. Because that means that the Fed is going to be on hold, as he said, to the end of 2022, but that's on an optimistic note that unemployment, well, he used, and actually when I was in my blog weeks ago, I had the same number, let's say in December, on a very optimistic outcome, unemployment's at 9%. And inflation, by their measures, PCE, or for some CPI, let's say it's at 6%. Is the Fed going to move? The operative answer is no. Because we already know that the Fed pivoted when unemployment was at 3.5% from a tightening cycle. And now that they're on record as being the most concerned, and I'm not locking up with that. From a moral standpoint, I absolutely agree, but they are on record as their goal is they will not rest from this policy until the last hired first fired all have jobs again, because that was the most significant measure of success for the Fed. How many times did we hear from Powell talk about that blacks and Hispanics and others who have struggled in the job market, this was the best job market that they've had in 40 some odd years. Well, that's what they're going to try to return to. So that has policy on a fixed course, meaning they're going nowhere. In fact, if there's any hiccups, and I know that John has been writing about, you know, some of the things with testing and a resurgence, if we get hiccups, and people get nervous and they start selling the equity markets, I'm willing to believe that the first thing they'll do, and they'll hate it, well, we'll probably see yield curve control, or maybe we'll see negative interest rates. But those are the two tools that they've bandied about most if we, in fact, get to a more difficult situation. And make no mistake about it. Inflation has no place on it. They can say it all they want, but they are a jobs organization now, and that's what their focus is going to be on. So I agree with John that my underlying fundamental analysis in a traditional sense would be to get short this market, meaning the equity market, because it's way overvalued by all my metrics, except on the metric of ultra-cheap money. And if the dollar does what I think it's going to do, which is go a lot lower, and I was on that, Richard, with you many weeks ago, if not, well, certainly since May 24th, when I believe that Wolfgang Fibel absolutely did a 180 and a very important 180, and he is the second most powerful person in Germany, so I paid attention to it, but I think the dollar is headed lower. So if I'm building a portfolio today, if I can follow in John's exhaust fumes, I'm building, and I'm doing it. So, you know, when Richard, as you know, I eat my own cookie. So I'm building a portfolio right now of high quality mining companies with low debt, decent dividends, and agricultural companies, because I believe that there is no global fight against inflation. And one of the more positive things, because they've been trying to create inflation, will be that. And I think those types of businesses will be the best situated to take advantage of it.
Do you see that potential for rising inflation, John, like a stagflationary environment, given the conditions of fiscal stimulus, monetary stimulus, and supply chain disruptions?
I wouldn't rule it out, but that's not my primary scenario. I'm much more concerned about that we get into a deflationary environment. Ira talked about negative interest rates. I don't think we see negative interest rates unless, and this is a big unless, we get deflation down into the, 2 or 3% deflation. And when you've got a supply shock like we're seeing, that's not out of the realm of possibility. And that would be very disruptive. I think you honestly would have to see something. You'd have to see real deflation before you get negative interest rates. I think they'd be willing to do it if they saw real deflation. We've got a true dichotomy, and I just don't know how to gauge it. I mean, I wish I was smart enough. We're going to see supply issues because we're trying to fix our supply chain. I mean, bluntly, and I don't think it's a bad idea to be fixing the supply chain. We've finally realized as a country that, gee, maybe we can't trust the Chinese or the more rational way to look at it is we don't need all our eggs in one basket. I mean, the swabs, for instance, that we needed, which we're now getting enough of, we're getting them from Italy, they're starting to make them here in the U.S. The swabs that we bought to do the tests all came from within 2 miles of each other in Milan, Italy, right in the very epicenter of the COVID thing. So they literally got shut down. I mean, it's like, who planned this? And the answer is nobody planned it. It just, it worked out that, we're getting our swabs from here. And everybody thought about price, and nobody was paying any attention to supply chains. I mean, supply, and so we're going to be moving more and more businesses, not just in medicine, are going to be moving their, stuff that we really honestly, scouts on are going to have. Okay, we can't afford to be without that. That product. And we're going to see that, I believe, happen more and more. So that's a good thing. But that has the real potential to be disruptive.
Interesting. And your thoughts, Ira?
Well, we've gone back and forth, and when Richard, when we did a while ago with Dr. Hunt, Lacey Hunt, who I know is a good friend of John's, we've gone back and forth on the supply shock, demand shock. I've always been in the demand shock, which would bear far more on this than the supply shock, because the supply, we're going to readjust. And I know people who, I know some people who build factories, and they've been moving factories out of China for 2-3 years already, because they could see, a lot of businesses could see the writing on the wall with President Trump years ago, and they knew that it had to move. You know, and that's why I've been very bullish on Mexico. Of course, you know, Mexico is still can't get out of its own way because it needs to deal with its corruption, which is so systemic to Mexico. But look at NAFTA was built for a reason. The Chinese depreciated the yuan on January 1st, 1994 for a reason, to prevent those supply chains being built in Mexico to begin with, which is why you had the tequila crisis, which there were just so many things. The Chinese knew exactly what was going on in the world, and they interfered with it. So we got the yuan to depreciate from 5.8 to 8.7 January 1st, lo and behold, the day that NAFTA began. So now we're just going to really reinstate NAFTA. And, you know, I can look at Kansas Southern as a proxy for that, that tells me that, and that stock has performed unbelievably well for a year and a half. It's hard for me to believe that Warren Buffett hasn't made a move on it, but I know he doesn't pay retail. And that stock has been driven up. So, I mean, John is right. The supply chains are going to move. Which parts we're talking about, we'll have to wait and see, and we'll have to see what Europe does with this too, because this is not just a bilateral decision. It's a multifaceted decision. So we'll see the way it plays out. Is that going to lead to the inflation? I'm not in that camp. I can be proven wrong. I'll be the first one to admit it. I think inflation is going to be a monetary phenomenon, just because they're pumping. This is different than in 2007, 8, and 9, because this is not a concept of the interest on excess reserves. That's not as in play here. So you're going to get some velocity to this money. You're starting to get a little now. I know those velocity numbers are still very, very weak. But that's where I'll be watching. And if you couple that with a weak dollar, which I think is coming, I think we'll get some of that in play in a very dramatic fashion. But those supply chains are going to move. Listen, the capacity, some of those industrial capacity, manufacturing capacity, has already moved out of China to Malaysia, Vietnam, Cambodia, Indonesia is always a work in progress. So there's no question that's going on. And people, U.S. corporations sold their souls, because if we go back to the early aughts, you couldn't walk into a bookstore without seeing 1 billion customers, and everybody raced there for 1 billion customers. They knew what they were doing. They knew that they were selling their souls for access to that. And no matter what the cost was, they were willing to incur it until, you know, things started to change in the last, especially the last 3-4 years. So, yeah, I think that's right. But is it going to be disruptive? I'm not so sure about that, because the process has already started. Now, for certain things, absolutely.
Well, it had started in certain businesses. It clearly hadn't started in the pharmaceutical area enough. And there were a lot of businesses that were sourcing from China simply because it was the cheapest source. It was they were bottom line oriented. And I think that's going to change. Now, you may be right. Businesses have a tendency to try to do, okay, once they make the decision, okay, we're no longer going to make ourselves vulnerable to single source supply chain. We may still take some from China, but we're going to bring some back to Mexico. We're going to bring some to the United States. Maybe we'll source from Canada or Europe. I live in Puerto Rico now, and I think that one of the real potential winners out of all of this could end up being Puerto Rico, because it's we've had tax preferences for pharmaceutical companies in the past. Basically, they were taken out during the it was it was a policy that Bush was working on, and I think Obama kept it up. But Puerto Rico was a main significant producer of pharmaceuticals, and we've got literally millions of square feet of pharmaceutical grade manufacturing warehouses sitting empty. There is talk in Congress about changing that those policies back, if you will, to where we were. That would make sense. And so now you've got, a lot of the things that we were making. I mean, simple stuff. I'm not talking about complicated medicines here. But stuff that's now being made in a country that we don't have to worry about it not being politically friendly.
Well, I agree. I think Puerto Rico is a perfect recipient of it. You know, they've done enough, you know, with so many tax incentives to get, but it's, you know, it's high time to really put that into play. But that's, you know, to me, a very similar story to Mexico. You know, keep them close. And you know what? And you are just going to turn here, and labor is going to start to get a bigger piece of the reward rather than just global capital, you know, prancing around the world, in, you know, arbitraging cheap labor. That is going to be, I think, one of the most significant changes. And I think when Thomas Piketty, back in 2012, when he came out with his book, I think that was, you know, he put a light on it. It was too thick a read for most people. Myself, I read the excerpts of many of his essays, but I just did not take on that whole book. But when labor, you know, when you're willing to stop arbitraging labor, then it makes more sense, of course, to shorten a lot of the supply chains because you're just not searching out cheap production.
And John, do you see the potential for large-scale fiscal stimulus by governments in either Europe or North America?
Oh, absolutely. We'll have a small scale by the end of July, before they go for the summer break. They'll do a some type of extension of unemployment. I don't know whether they'll do it at the level, you know, of $600 a week. Maybe they take it down to $500 or I mean, sadly, honestly, we just have no way of knowing what these guys are going to be doing. It's just they're winging it as they're making it up as they go along. But that being said, they'll give us something. The Democrats wanted a $3 trillion bill. That's a non-starter. But they're going to get something. And Trump's not going to dump in an election year. He's not going to hang that many people out to dry. It's just not going to happen. And then they're going to come back from their summer break, and then we'll get real stimulus.
By that, do you mean like a large-scale infrastructure type of spending?
Large-scale. I mean, they'll throw the book at it. Okay. Because they all want to be seen as doing something prior to the election, both sides. And I just don't see a lot to discourage that. I mean, does that concept thrill me that we're going to be spending that much money? No, it does not. Do I think we will? Yes, I do.
And your thoughts, Ira?
I couldn't agree with John more. The The only thing that I would say, a pox on both of them, because this plan should have been in place. I with you, Richard, I've argued with, Peter Bookman and I both argued with David Rosenberg, because at 3.5% unemployment, when we discussed this back in February and March, David was worried about where you're going to find the workers. Well, we know that there's no problem finding the workers in a very fast fashion here. And these plans should have been there. Roads, airports, come on. But they've got nothing. They've got nothing. But I agree with John. You can't afford the maloptics of doing nothing, especially with the amount of unemployment that we're struggling through. And I don't see any real resolution of it. And it's really a shame, because right now we're just, excuse my French, pissing money, and we're not investing it. We're not investing it. We're trying to hold back the water. But we should really be projects that are really holding back the water with infrastructure projects, and these should have been in place. But both, a pox on all their houses, because they have nothing. There was no preparation of this whatsoever. And so now they will put some things together to look like they're doing something. But, and I agree with John. There's no way. They can't possibly go into the election. They'll get every dime spent that everybody wants. So absolutely in agreement. And how I played in the markets, that's why I like the miners and other things to go with them, because I do believe in that. And, I look at other facets of this, especially companies like Fleur, which should be at the forefront of this, but has been so badly managed. And John, I'm sure, knows more far about it than I do, because he's down in Puerto Rico and they've had nothing but problems down there anyway. So, I mean, this is the stuff that we should be really looking at and should be in movement now. So I agree with him. It's coming. It will be there.
And a final
question. Right.
Yeah, sorry, do you want to mention something, John?
No, I don't want to comment. I think he's right. I mean, it doesn't make any difference whether we agree with it or not. It's going to get done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's no price too high, John. They've showed us that. They don't care. Their fear is not spending money.
And a final question, John, you've written recently on your vision of a wonderful new world coming out of this challenging situation. Can you elaborate on that vision?
Well, I mean, what I'm talking about I think we're going to end up with, it's what I'm writing about in my book, we end up, first of all, technology, the whole technology wave is accelerating. We're going to get more, better, faster, I mean, really cool technologies. That being said, we're also going to see the final portion of Neil Howe and Strauss's fourth turning. Which if you go back and you read those books now, it's like reading the news. It's truly almost scary. And that is all going to be happening. George Friedman's just got a book out. It's sitting here on my desk that he calls the storm before the calm, where he talks about a 50-year cycle and an 80-year cycle in American history. And what he's arguing is that we're getting ready to see, for the first time in our history in this country, we're getting ready to see those cycles come together at the same time, just about the end of the fourth turning. So we're going to have this double whammy and what I've been calling the Great Reset, which is when I see us having, by that time, we've got $40 trillion in U.S. government debt. Maybe that's being... I mean, I thought it would take us to the mid-20s to get to 30 trillion, and we're going to be there sometime first quarter at the rate we're going, maybe sooner. But we're going to have to what economists call rationalize that debt. And it's not just here, it's not just in the U.S., it's in Europe, it's in Japan, it's in China, it's in Australia, it's countries all over the world, Canada. And all of that's going to have to, we're going to have to figure out what to do. And one of the reasons I'm not running around with my head, you know, twisting and turning about the dollar is that I think it's very possible that we end up with a situation where it's, you know, what's going to be the cleanest dirty shirt in the laundry? I'm not sure that we know yet what it's going, what things are going to look like. I mean, we really just don't know. We'll see. First of all, we have to know who are the politicians that are going to be running the world in 2027, 2028. Who's going to be in charge? To get an idea, I mean, realistic idea of what kind of policies are they going to put in place? Right now, we don't know what those policies are going to be because we don't know who it's going to be, who's going to be making those decisions. But there will be no good decisions available. There will only be a set of bad choices. And they'll have to make them. They'll have to figure out how we're going to rationalize the debt. And that's going to be some very big losers and some very big winners. But I do think coming out the other side of that, we have had numerous situations, I mean, like a couple hundred, where countries have destroyed their currency. And, you know, 3 years later, 2 years later, they come back and they're back up and operating and they're doing well. So it should not surprise us to see that happen again. So I'm not being Pollyannish here. I'm just saying once you've rationalized that debt, which I think is the big drag on the economy, well, now you've got something that you can move forward on. And I think we do. And the technology is improving. We're going to see, I think the biotechnology, we're going to see in the mid to late 20s. I mean, it's getting better all the time. But it's going to be really phenomenal. We're going to see health cures, technology, cheaper energy, more abundance in the 30s than we can possibly imagine today. Now, Ira may be right. We may see gold at 10,000.
Wait. I didn't say that. I didn't say that.
Well, we didn't even talk about gold. Okay. So, well, you talked about buying gold stocks and miners.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming that you're a gold bull if you're buying gold stocks and gold miners. Well, and so forth. By the way, I haven't sold any of my gold. It's still sitting in the bank vault. But I think we have no. It depends on who the politicians are running it. And they could end up giving us a hyperinflationary issue, in which case, all bets are off what the price of gold is. It'll be some silly number. Or they could give us a massive deflationary world, depending on who's running it. I would bet on the former rather than the latter, because that's just kind of way history generally is gone. But I'm not a believer in investing in gold, if you will. I'm a believer. I buy my gold because it's central bank insurance.
I'm afraid
they're going to do something stupid. And so I have car insurance, I have health insurance, I have insurance on my house.
Yeah.
You have hurricane insurance in Puerto Rico. Yeah. I have central bank insurance just because I think I'm going to need it.
Well, we agree because for 20 years, that's been my, people say, oh, inflation. Gold's not a hedge against inflation. Gold's a hedge against central banks losing credibility. That's why it's going up now, because Wall Street and stock pickers love the Fed, but the rest of the world is uncertain about all central banks, which is why, first and foremost, gold has gone up against everything but the dollar most dramatically. And now it may be the dollar's turn, because we're back at negative real yields and don't look to go positive whatsoever. So I agree with, that's exactly why I own gold. I sit here, right, and I own gold, and I wish gold would go to $40, because then I know that everything is right in the world.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if my gold goes to zero, I'll give it to my great-grandkids, and they'll want to know why it was Papa John so carefully keeping these funny gold coins. They're pretty, thank you.
Yeah.
I'll make a necklace out of them. Because if gold goes to some low price, then that means everything else in my portfolio works. And so,
but you're right.
That would be a good outcome.
If central bankers, and Bernanke taught everybody this, Greenspan was ambivalent. But Bernanke, he spent his life. 1937 was the basis of his entire research. And he feared deflation more than anything else. And a central bank, that's what they fear, well, they will eventually keep pulling things forward, and the currency will start to lose some of its value. Look, it's intertemporal misallocation is the world that we live in, because...
But it's the question I have, our fall against what? I mean, is the central bank in Europe or the central bank in Japan or Canada doing any better than we are?
Well...
If it falls against something, it'll fall against gold. I don't know that it falls against other, fiat currencies if they're doing the same thing.
I have to agree. But if you unlock in Europe, and it's a big if, but if you create a unified bond with a unified fiscal harmonization, then you have to change your whole tune, because now you have an alternative to where there really has been no alternative on a big enough scale. So, that's one of the things that's out there. And, of course, that's Germany. If Germany says that this is a doable thing, it'll get done, because they're the one guaranteeing it all anyway. So some people talk, and then some people talk and actually know what they're talking about. And the Germans, are at that pinnacle. Now, they could pull the plug on the whole project, and then I believe we go into a mammoth global depression, first and foremost, because the financial destruction that will take place is immense. And I think the Germans have really awoken to that. And it's a reality. It's a great potential, far greater than it was. But that's the legacy of Draghi. I'm not a Draghi fan, but he couldn't have done it without Merkel anyway. And they built up that massive balance sheet.
Any listeners that are still with us, my letter's free, so you just go to Malden Economics and click on Thoughts from the Frontline, and you're one of my 1 million closest friends. So,
yep. And Ira, how can our listeners learn more about your work? Ira? Okay, I think you're still there, John?
I'm still here, yes.
Oh, okay. I think we might have lost Ira, but that great discussion. Thank you very much for that great insight.
The FRA Roundtable Insight Show is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the show each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Any discussions among the panel participants or responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the panel participants and do not take into consideration the listener's suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Please be advised that you invest or speculate at your own risk.